This UCSD-TV program is a presentation of University of California Television for educational and non-commercial use only.
We're here with Stephen Mayfield, our newest professor of biology here at UCSD. Now, Steve is the director of SDCAB, which stands for the San Diego Center for Algae Biotechnology, and he's also an algae expert. In fact, he's been called an algae guru by one of the local papers in town, having spent the last 22 years at the Scripps Research Institute studying algae. Steve, welcome.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me out.
Now, Steve, what is the interest in algae? It's the stuff that we usually want to get rid of our swimming pools.
Yeah, that's right. Most people spend most of their energy trying to get this out of their swimming pools and bird baths. The interest in it, I think, comes from a couple of different things. One, there's certainly been a big push over the last few years to go to green technologies, and algae is the original green technology. And by green technologies, what we mean is renewable, sustainable, environmentally friendly. These are tough little suckers. They survive out there in the wild. That's why they grow in your bird bath and your pool. And what we're learning to do, here at UC San Diego, is to train these guys to do a few things they haven't done before. One will be to make biofuels, and there's certainly a huge interest now because of bioenergy and in getting sustainable energy for this country. And then also we can teach them to do a lot of other tricks. They can make nutraceuticals, they can make pharmaceuticals. There are just a variety of things they do. And, of course, they do it in a green and environmentally friendly way.
Now, what's this organization that you're heading up? It's a new organization called SDCAB for the San Diego Center for Algae Biotechnology.
That's right. So the center was originally founded between three different institutions, UC San Diego, Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and the Scripps Research Institute. And we did that because there's a fantastic history here in San Diego of people like myself and Greg Mitchell and Steve Kay and Susan Golden and Jim Golden. A variety of people have been working on algae for many, many years. And we've had collaborations going for the last half dozen years. And then because of the push into biofuels and specifically into algal biofuels, we thought that it was a good time for all of us to get together and start to do the things that, the collaborations that we traditionally carried out in a more organized fashion.
Now let's talk about algae for biofuels. How long will it take to develop algae as biofuels, and how much does it cost right now, and can we really expect this to be in our pumps in the next 10 years or so?
Well, it's actually already in your pumps now. So all of the petroleum that we pull out of the ground is actually ancient algae deposits. So we're actually not teaching these guys to do anything new. What we're doing is, rather than taking deposits that are geological, that are underground, have been stored for millions of years, we're actually producing these things in real time. It's already going now. That is to say, there are ponds throughout the world where people are growing algae, mainly for nutraceutical use, or for human consumption, for animal consumption. And we're just starting to convert those over to the biofuel sector. Mm-hmm. Then it depends who you ask. I think we'll have something launched in the next 2 to 3 years. There will be pilot plants out there that are growing algae, that are producing fuels from them, that we're driving cars, that we're flying airplanes on. But, of course, it'll be a very small scale compared to the amount of fuel we actually use in this country.
So we already have some sort of biofuel that we're pumping into gas right now, ethanol from corn.
That's right.
How do you compare the two? Is algae biofuels going to be something that's going to be better, cheaper than ethanol?
Yeah. Well, so it'll be different in a couple of really important ways. The first way is that the fuel that we get from algae is what we call fungible fuel. That means it's a direct replacement for the petroleum we use now. So the fuels we'll derive from algae will be diesel, will be gasoline, and will be jet fuel. So ethanol is not any of those. Ethanol, it's alcohol, it's ethyl alcohol. And that we can add to fuels, and we do right now at about 5%. But as soon as you go above 5%, they have an unwanted characteristic in that they bring water along with them. And when they do that, that completely changes the way your engine runs. It causes them to rust. The other thing is that they're lower energy density. So ethanol only has about 70% of the energy on a per gallon basis. So the fuels we make from algae will be exact replacements of what we're already making right now.
So algae actually produce gasoline or oil-like substances. Why is that?
Yeah, so there's algae produce many different things. They can actually produce the sugars, the same sugars that we get out of corn, and we could ferment those into ethanol. But when any photosynthesis takes place in an organism, they're always making a decision on where they're going to divert that energy. So they can put that energy into sugar, they can put that energy into hydrocarbons or lipids, or they can put that energy into proteins. So it's the hydrocarbons and the lipids that algae make, and they've just biologically decided that's what they're going to do for their storage. So that's how they store their energy. And that energy stored in hydrocarbons or in lipids can easily be converted to gasoline or diesel or jet fuel.
So where are scientists right now in developing algae specifically for biofuels?
So the two big challenges that we have, one of them, of course, is biologic. You know, we need to produce, you know, these fuels at very high concentration in the algae. But the main one is economic, and that is we have to learn to go to scale. We burn about 150 billion gallons of gasoline every year in this country. That's an enormous number. So if we're really going to make a dent in that, if we are really going to take biofuels and impact the amount of fuel that, we use in this country, it's a very large number. So going to scale, that's something we've never done before. That's something we've never done before in biofuels. We've done it in American agriculture. We have about 100 million acres of corn. We have about 50 million acres of soybean. We think that we could replace most of the liquid fuels required in this country with about 30 to 40 million acres of algae. So that's a big number, but it's a number that we think we can deal with.
So I understand algae biofuels also have some other advantages over ethanol. The fact that you can actually grow them, which might much greater density, for example, and they don't emit as much carbon into the atmosphere.
That's right. So one of the things when we started to make biofuel from corn, from ethanol, right? Originally, people always assumed, well, since that carbon is captured by photosynthesis, that must mean that these are carbon neutral fuels, meaning the amount of carbon that you release when you burn it is exactly equivalent to the amount of carbon that was taken out of the atmosphere when you grew the fuel. And that's true, but you have to do something which we call a life cycle analysis, and that's you have to measure all the energy in. So when we're talking about corn ethanol, it's not just the energy to grow the corn, it's also the energy to take that corn, to transport it to a distillery, the energy it takes to ferment the corn into ethanol, and then to distill the ethanol off the water. That actually uses a huge amount of energy. So when you add all those things together, right, that's where you come up with what we call the life cycle analysis or the true carbon footprint. So in ethanol from corn, that turned out not to be very good. In fact, it turned out to make to require almost as much energy to produce the ethanol from corn that you actually got out of burning the ethanol. So it was almost the same as just using petroleum. In algae, our initial life cycle analysis say that we're about 60 to 70% reduction in that carbon utilization. So they look to be much better than ethanol.
Why is it more efficient to grow algae than it is to grow corn for biofuels?
Right, so there's really a couple reasons for that. So all energy that we produce, that all bioenergy that we produce, comes from photosynthesis, right? And that's whether that's true whether it's algae or corn or soybeans or any of the other plants. And so photosynthesis is actually fixing carbon, fixing CO2. So what we're doing is we're pulling CO2 out of the air, and we're using sunlight to fix that into sugars. And so that process is actually dependent upon the concentration of CO2. And it turns out that algae, that CO2 can be concentrated much higher in water than it can be in the atmosphere. And so we can take an algae pond, we can actually take a CO2 source, we could take the CO2 coming off of a power plant and pump it directly into that pond, and we can drive the productivity through the roof on that, right? The other thing that it does is because they're little single cells, they can all spread out so they can form a perfect surface for absorbing sunlight. So unlike a leaf, which might sit like this, and if the sunlight's coming here, would miss it on either side, algae can simply move to absorb that. So those two things in combination allow it to actually be, some people say 50 times more efficient than higher plants, but I think conservatively it's 10 to 20 times more efficient than most higher plants are.
And it's also true that you can grow algae in a lot of different places that you can't grow higher plants. For example, you can grow it in high ceiling environments out
That's
in the
right.
desert.
That's right. Yeah. So one of the big advantages on this is that we're not going to displace existing agricultural land. So we are not going to have to go to Iowa and displace any corn or soybeans. Right. We're going to grow this in the deserts. We're going to grow this in wastelands. We're going to grow this out in the Imperial Valley near the Salton Sea, where nothing chooses to grow anymore. And that's because algae has actually adapted to these very hostile environments. It spent the last couple billion years surviving in places where other organisms didn't want to, and we can take advantage of that evolution.
And also, algae can make use of a lot of nutrients that actually we're using or dumping out into the water system great quantities, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So one of the requirements for any photosynthetic organism is not only that we have sunlight and CO2, but we also need two very important nutrients. We need nitrogen and we need phosphate. And right now, all of our municipal wastewater that we dump out into the ocean or we pump back into the ground, we never pull that nitrogen and phosphate out of it. It's actually loaded with that. Now, when we take those and pump them out into the ocean, that's actually a pollutant in the ocean. And what it does is it causes algae blooms out in the ocean, and then these things settle to the bottom. And when they settle to the bottom and start to decay, they deplete the water of oxygen. So there are actually dead zones outside of every major city in the world where we are killing the ocean. And we're doing that because we're dumping water loaded with the nutrients that are required for algae. There is no reason to do that. And in the very near future, I believe all of our municipal wastewater is going to be pumped through algae ponds, because that'll pull the nitrogen and the phosphate out of it, cleans the water up before we release it. So we'll put it back into the aquifer, we'll release it into the ocean much cleaner, and then we'll actually have the benefit of that we don't have to add artificial fertilizers to it. We're just going to take the nitrogen and phosphate that's already there.
And another benefit possibly is that you could get a carbon tax credit from growing algae. Is that right?
Yes. So that legislation hasn't been passed yet. Certainly we can take the CO2 that comes off of a coal-fired electrical plant and pump that right into the ponds and capture that CO2. Mm-hmm. So at the point when this country goes to cap and trade, as it's called, or puts some sort of tax onto carbon, then we'll have that added economic advantage for growing algae. That's right.
But right now, algae is fairly expensive if you want to put it in your tank. You can make it right now, but it's fairly expensive. How much per gallon?
Right now the estimates range from about $10 per gallon up to about $50 or $60 per gallon. And that's a pretty big number. That's not something you or I would want to pay to put into our cars right now. But as a scientist, whenever I look at a problem and I say, oh, I only have to make a tenfold improvement in it, mm-hmm. that's pretty easy to do biologically. So if we're at something like $10 or $20 per gallon now and we can make a fivefold improvement in that, then we're competitive with petroleum, with fossil fuel. And we think we can achieve that in the next 3 to 5 years.
So what kind of algae are the best kinds to actually make algal biofuels? The stuff that you have bubbling right behind you, is that one example?
So that's one example. Yeah. So that happens to be a eukaryotic green algae. That one's called Chlamydomonas. It's sort of our favorite little lab rat.
And eukaryotic means what?
So when we talk about algae, most of us, and we look at things that grow out in the water, there are actually two forms of that. One is prokaryotic, that's bacteria, mm-hmm. and the other is eukaryotic, and eukaryotic means more sophisticated. So mm-hmm. you and I are eukaryotes, plants mm-hmm. are eukaryotes, dogs are eukaryotes. Bacteria are not, they're prokaryotic. Mm-hmm. So these are eukaryotic algae, the little guy growing behind me, and those naturally accumulate very high levels of fat, of lipid. Mm-hmm. So they naturally make large amounts of things that we can turn into biofuel. We don't know yet which one we're going to use. So there's a couple of things that we have to identify. Mm-hmm. People estimate that there are 300 to 500,000 different algal species out in the environment, and we've only looked at a tiny fraction of that. In the lab, maybe we've looked at a few hundred. So part of the research is we have to go and look at all of the different species that are out in the environment so that we can identify the best one to use for fuel. And the best ones are going to be ones that grow fast, that produce large amounts of fat, and that are resistant to being eaten by all the little predators out there who want to come along and eat you. And so that's part of the discovery process. Now, what's likely to happen is we will launch a production strain in the next 2 or 3 years, and then we'll make improvements on that, and we'll replace it. So the production strain we have in 2 years is unlikely that it'll be the same one we'll have in 10 years.
So we were talking before, and I remember you saying that there are certain strains, for example, that are in your bird bath or in your swimming pool, that when they dry up, they actually increase their storage of fat or
That's right.
oil.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Right. So because these, because algae all live in water, and of course at some times you're going to have droughts, or you're just going to have times of the year when there isn't rainfall out there and ponds are going to dry up. So algae have adapted themselves over the last several billion years to survive when times get tough. So one of the things they do when times get tough is they start to accumulate storage lipids. They start to accumulate fats, actually the biofuels. They start to accumulate those when times get tough. Now, they do that for two reasons. They do it, one, so that they have an energy storage, so that it's basically just money in the bank. So the times are bad now, I put some money away in the bank. When the times get good and I want to start growing again, then I can pull that energy out of my reserves and I can use that to rebuild the organisms. But the second thing it also does is it gives them protection. So it gives them protection from UV light. It gives them protection from dehydration, from desiccation, from drying out. So it actually does a twofold thing. It's protection and then it's storage. It's money in the bank for a later day. Now, we actually take advantage of that, and that the protection that they have, that they provide for themselves, is an antioxidant. And so when we eat that, we get that same antioxidant benefit. So most commercial algae that's grown right now is grown for a couple of reasons. You make a couple of different proteins. One is called astaxanthin and one is called beta-carotene. And both of these are fantastic antioxidants. And that's why algae is produced as a nutraceutical.
Now, your lab and several other labs here at UC San Diego are actually trying to find ways to make algae more productive for That's biofuels.
Right. That's right.
Explain to me the process of what you're trying to do here.
Yeah, so in order to get biofuels to work, it's an interesting combination. We need not only the biology of understanding the algae and manipulating it to, increase its fat concentration, to grow fast, to survive out in the environment, but then we actually have to interact with the engineers, because we're going to grow these things in ponds, and then we're going to have to harvest them from those ponds, and then we're going to have to extract the fuel from them, and then we're going to have to crack that fuel into gasoline or diesel. So it's actually a very interesting combination of both biology and engineering. And the real point of the San Diego Center for Algae Biotechnology is to get those different groups working together. Mm-hmm. To get the biologist working together with the chemical engineers, with the agricultural engineers, and ultimately with the farmers, because these are the people who are going to grow this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's a whole brand new industry. And we're having to learn all of those things.
Yeah, and SDCAB is not just the researchers here at UCSD.
That's right.
They're also at the Scripps Research Institute. Where else?
San Diego State, the Salk Institute. And then it's also our commercial sector partners. Mm-hmm. So part of the point of this center was that we get academic research out of the lab and into our commercial sector partners. And our belief on that was that it's great to make discoveries in the lab and to publish papers, but this is such an important problem. It's such a societal problem that it's our obligation to, as quick as we can, to get this out in the real world. Because only when we get biofuels out into the real world and really take them to scale will we start to have an impact on our environment.
Now, you're also working with an algae farm out in the Imperial Valley. Right. What exactly are you doing there? And can you take us through why maybe this region might be a good place to grow algae for biofuels?
Yeah, so the requirements for growing algae are obviously you'd like it to be warm. You'd like there to be lots of sunlight out there. And then it helps if you have open land that isn't very expensive. So here, actually on the coast at San Diego, we don't have very many of those good attributes. But not too far from here is the Imperial Valley. And it's really good. So the temperature is obviously warm out there. It's almost a desert. So there's a lot of sunlight out there. There's a fair amount of water. Now, it's not high-quality potable water that we can drink. It's high in salt. The Salton Sea is there. That's full of salt. But algae are perfectly capable of growing salt water. So it turns out to be a very good environment. Now, there's a research facility that we have out there. It's in a little city called Nyland. And we have several large-scale ponds. Now, the point of those ponds is not to go into production, per se, but to take the strains that we're developing here in the lab and get them out in the real world and see how they do in what could be a commercial setting. Because once we put them out there, different things happen than happen in the lab. The sunlight's much brighter out there than it is here. There are predators that come in there and want to eat our guys. And so what it is that's a commercial-type research facility.
So what do you mean by the predators that are in the ponds right there?
So one of the things that we have to do with algae is we have to domesticate it. We have to do to algae what we've done to every other crop that we have out there. And one of the most important parts of crop is crop protection. If you just go and plant a tomato plant out in your backyard, You'll know that there are insects that come and eat the tomatoes. There are fungus that attacks that. There are bacteria that get onto that. So all of those things are predators. They're all trying to eat your tomato plant. And the exact same thing happens in algae. And in fact, in algae ponds, if you go and get a microscope and look at the little predators that are in there, some of them are just fantastic little monsters. There's little animals called rotifers that fly around on little wings and gobble up everything that come through. There's another insect called the daphnia, or some people call it water flea. And these are just fantastic little monsters.
And there's one that looks like Ghostbusters, is that right?
Yeah, so one of the ponds out in New Mexico actually got into it, what we think is a rotifer that looked exactly like one of the cartoon characters from the Ghostbusters movie. Yeah. That's what it became known as, the Ghostbusters rotifer.
And I understand that you've recently discovered that there are different kinds of algae that do well at different times of the year out there. You've even gotten a version of winter wheat, like winter algae out there.
Yeah, so biofuels produced from algae are going to, I think, are going to very much look like agriculture, mm-hmm. right? That is that we will actually have crop rotation. So one season we will have one type of algae in there, and that might be our summer algae, and then we'll have a different algae that grows there in the winter. Certainly temperature impacts these things, sunlight impacts them, predators impact them. There's going to be times when predators are going to attack a pond and kill it, and we're just going to have to put a new different strain in, a different species in that's resistant to that predator. So there definitely will be crop rotation involved in this.
So I've heard that the region, San Diego with the Imperial Valley, has been called by some people a green Houston.
That's right.
What exactly is meant by that, and why is San Diego such a great place to develop algae for biofuels?
Well, it's a great reason for two. I mean, one, we have the environment that's favorable. So it's warm here, there's lots of sunlight, and at least in the Imperial Valley, a fair amount of land. But then the other thing that we have in San Diego, which is a bit unique, is so we have the biologists who've been here for many, many years, myself 22 years, as you said, other researchers just as long, some longer. So we've got a very good history of working on algae here. And then an interesting thing is that we also have the biotech sector here. And it turns out that really to get algal biofuels, you know, really to the forefront quick, really to get commercialization, that it turned out that it's the combination of having that sort of biotech, high throughput, entrepreneurial spirit that's here in San Diego, and we interface that with the algae researchers that are already here, and it was the combination of those two things that really allowed us to accelerate the research. I mean, that's actually the reason we believe that we can be successful in the next 3 to 5 years. That's why this isn't a 20-year program. Mm.
So here at UCSD, you came to UCSD after spending 22 years at the Scripps Research Institute. Why the move now?
Yeah, so why come over here now? I think the opportunity to closely collaborate with both my colleagues that are here, the other faculty that are here, and also because the students now and the postdocs now have sort of figured out that this is really the challenge of our generation, that bioenergy and getting sustainable energy are going to be the most important research program that we have over the next 10 years. And so the opportunity to come here to the university, to have those students come into the lab, to have the undergraduates come in here, to train these guys, and not only just, you know, it's not just the energy of them here, but everyone, when you get together, there's a certain critical mass that gets achieved in some things, and we have an opportunity to do it here. And I saw that we had that opportunity and came over here to help catalyze it.
There have been some recent hires also here at UCSD in this area.
Yeah. And got two wonderful colleagues from Texas A&M, mm-hmm. Susan Golden and James Golden. Now, they work on prokaryotic algae, cyanobacteria, but they very much are colleagues of mine. I've known both of them for very many years, and they were recruited out here a year ago, and that really helped us make a critical mass for the biofuel, for algal biofuels here.
And Steve Kay, who's also the dean here?
Yep, Steve Kay is the dean here. Steve has, his history has mainly been in higher plants. He worked on Arabidopsis and crop plants. A few years ago, he started to work on algae. But because algae is really an agricultural crop, just a new form of agricultural crop, mm-hmm. Steve understands very well what the problems, what the challenges are, and has very much helped catalyze putting this group together. And he was the founding director of the San Diego Center for Algae Biotechnology. Yeah.
So getting back to SDCAB, I know SDCAB recently got some funding from Congress, and $750,000.
Yeah.
What's going to happen with that money? And that's stimulus money, right?
Yeah, so that stimulus money that came to us, that was from the local representatives, Susan Davis and Brian Bilbray, were kind enough to look at this. They had been out to visit us and realized that what they needed to do was sort of jumpstart the program. Mm-hmm. That although the federal government does not have a very good history of funding research in algae, that's changing now. But like everything that happens, you know, in Congress and back in D.C., that's a little slow. And so they saw this as an opportunity to jumpstart this. So those funds were actually put in so that we could do some capital improvements here, so that we could put in some research ponds for the students here, so that we could build up the greenhouse and we could get the whole, the algae enterprise going here at UC San Diego.
So why are you called the San Diego Center for Algae Biotechnology? Why not just biofuels? Are there other things, aspects that you can develop from algae?
Yeah, so biofuels, you know, although the commercial sector partners sometimes don't like it when I say this, biofuels will likely be the last thing we sell out of algae. And the reason for that is because even though we complain about gasoline when it's $4 a gallon, we think that's outrageously expensive, that's really only 60 cents a pound, right? So you have to produce algae so cheap if you're going to burn it, that's very hard economically to get to. But as we started the conversation and said earlier, there's lots of wonderful things that it makes. It makes nutraceuticals. My lab has spent 10 years making protein therapeutics in this. And there are just a variety of fantastic applications from this. So almost anything that we can do by fermentation, you know, things that we can do in bacteria and yeast, we can also do in algae. You know, so people often ask me, oh, can we make algae wine? Well, we could. Mm-hmm. You know, we could make algae tequila if we wanted. Mm-hmm. But what's more likely to happen is we're going to make industrial enzymes. We're going to make protein therapeutics. We're going to make nutraceuticals, things like omega-3 fatty acids. All of these things we can make in algae. All of these are very high value. And what that means is we have a chance to be economically viable in these much quicker than we do in the biofuel sectors. So the reason we're the San Diego Center for Algae Biotechnology is because we want to promote all of those things. Protein therapeutics, you know, the protein-based pharmaceuticals are very expensive. They're the most expensive drugs in the world. They're actually so expensive that only a fraction of the people who could benefit will ever have an opportunity to use them. And we believe that we can make proteins so much cheaper in algae that we'll have an opportunity to impact that and really drive the cost of protein therapeutics down. Mm. The same is true about nutraceuticals. You know, it's really great for us to get omega-3, to get these oils that come out of fish. But as fish stocks dwindle, we have less and less of an opportunity to get those. Well, where those come from is the fish are out in the ocean. They're eating the algae. So it's actually the algae are the primary producers of those oils, and then they're concentrated in the fish. But there's no reason that we can't eat the algae directly. So one of the other programs we work on here are trying to make some of these very nice long-chain unsaturated fatty acids that we all know are so healthy for us. We're going to make those in the algae, and then we're just going to consume those directly.
That's nice.
So, and I think all those opportunities are out there, and I think a lot more that we haven't even thought about yet.
Algae beer, maybe.
Algae beer? I think the one that I'd like to work on is tequila from algae. So that's called Algila.
Algila.
And we're going to work on that. Because I think it'll be a nice green color. It'll have nice antioxidants
perfect,
in it. I think it's one of the programs that I think here in San Diego we should be working on.
That's good. Well, getting back to the pharmaceuticals, it's interesting because bacteria actually make a lot of synthetic pharmaceuticals.
That's right.
And so if you can get algae down to 60 cents per pound,
that's right.
How much cheaper will some of these drug regimens be if you can actually get them to be produced by algae instead of bacteria?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one of the, I don't want to say ironies, but one of the side benefits from this whole biofuel industry is that we will drive the price of algal biomass down so low. You know, so many discoveries are going to come along, so many efficiencies are going to be put into this organism that we will end up making algae for probably 50 cents a kilogram. That's the target number that we come down to. Well, when you do that, you're going to take away the 30 or 40% of that that's oil, and then you're going to have 60 or 70% left over. And what that 60 or 70% left over is mainly going to be proteins. And that means that if we make proteins in the same strains that we're going to produce biofuels in, we will be getting those proteins for, you know, less than 50 cents a kilogram. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a number, right now we pay about $10,000 a gram So 1/1,000th of a kilogram, we pay $10,000 if it's a pharmaceutical. Mm. So the biofuel technology that's coming along in algae will drive the price of everything algae-based down to a fraction of what it is today. Now, is that really going to drive down the price of drugs a thousandfold? No, but it'll certainly drive it down quite a bit. And I think what it'll do is allow us to make some pharmaceuticals, some protein-based pharmaceuticals that we simply couldn't make before because they were too expensive.
Now, when the moniker, the Green Houston for San Diego, got out into the press, there were some people that said, no, that's not quite right. Houston still has the energy infrastructure. Have you heard of any of these criticisms, and how would you respond to that?
Yeah, so I think if we look at, you know, when people talk about the Silicon Valley up in San Francisco, and that's where computers were developed, right? They were developed there for a variety of reasons, and not just because there was an existing computer industry there. They were developed there because there were some fantastic universities up there that were working on those things, and because there was a infrastructure for investing in those. That's what San Diego has. So I think the fact that, energy was made someplace else before, this is new energy. This isn't petroleum. We're not going to pull this out of the ground. And this is going to take a unique combination. And Houston just doesn't have that combination.
And they don't have the scientists, right?
They don't have the scientists working on algae. They don't have the venture capitalists spending on this. There's a reason Exxon came to San Diego and invested $300 million in synthetic genomics.
Yeah.
That was a specific choice, and that was a choice to come to that company and specifically to come to San Diego.
Right, and they don't have, when I said scientists, they really don't have the plant scientists. These are plant scientists that you're talking about here.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So is it strange in a way that plant scientists, or plant science, which really hadn't gotten much attention until now, is sort of leading the way?
I mean, I'd say it's almost a little alarming for me, right? After spending 25 years working on this, and I've always, I've loved these little guys, and I've always had postdocs and students in the lab that appreciated how fantastic of a resource they were and worked on them. But by and large, the public has ignored them. And actually, unfortunately, the funding groups have ignored them too. Research funding in algae is pathetic compared to what it is just into higher plants, and dwarfed by what's been spent in biomedical. And that's really a shame. When you think about how important energy is, energy security, energy is what allows this country to have the gross domestic product that we do, to be as productive as we are. That's directly proportional to the amount of energy we consume. So when you have something as important as that, and that we really haven't spent any money researching it, it's just a shame. But what's happened now over the last couple of years, people have figured this out. They figured out that energy is important. They figured out that we're running out of petroleum. And they figured out that we have an opportunity here to develop things in this country that will give us energy independence, energy security, create fantastic, numbers of new green jobs, and also, provide, like I said, so many other benefits, whether it's on the therapeutic side or the nutraceutical side, plastics, monomers, you name it. The technologies, has to be developed a little farther, but the opportunities, I think, are really fantastic. So it's a little alarming for me, having been, I don't want to say it's not that it's been a sleepy backwater, but it's been a very small group. When I went to meetings on algae, it was myself and maybe 10 other labs in this country and 20 others worldwide. And now you go to an algae meeting. We just had one here in San Diego last month with 800 people attending. And I suspect the next one will have well over 1,000, and it's just going to balloon from there.
It's totally changed now.
Totally, completely changed. It's a new era.
Yeah. So now corn ethanol had a lot of promises when it came out. And now we're starting to discover that it has some problems.
Right.
Are we painting too rosy a picture of algal biofuels, or are we getting ahead of ourselves? And how long is it going to be before we actually see some of these, see gas, for example, from algae or pharmaceuticals from algae?
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly, there's a cautionary tale that we got from ethanol. It looked really good coming out the door. It's like, wow, this will create jobs for farmers. We can blend this in our gasoline, right? And it's only when the industry became a little more mature that we began to look at these things. So we want to be careful as we develop these things in algae. Now, certainly, if we just sit down and take a pencil and paper and draw out, the energy inputs and the energy outputs, algae looks much, much better than corn. Everything we know about it so far says that it's going to be much better than corn from a greenhouse gas perspective. However, I do, you know, like you, I read the paper and I watch the news and I see some outrageous claims from algae, things that certainly are not true. Most of those claims are made by people who've never worked on algae before and probably never worked in biofuels before and probably aren't even biologists. So they sort of make some quick back-of-the-envelope calculations and start crowing about how wonderful it is. But I think the industry's been around long enough that some very sober minds have taken a look at this. You know, some very good engineers, some very good biologists. And right now, I think the scientific consensus is that this is our best shot. That right now, things are still looking very good. We've had a couple of years to look at this. We've had a couple of years to start to measure real numbers. There are a number of companies out there now. Sapphire Energy, which I'm a founder of, they now have several hundred acres down in New Mexico, 40 acres under production. General Atomics, Solazyme. There are a number of companies, commercial companies out there, that have been out long enough and started to produce real data, and it's still looking pretty good. So right now we're optimistic. Some people may be a little too optimistic. But I think right now we're on the path that this is going to be true, that this is going to be a very good benefit. We have to get the cost down. Mm-hmm. We have to learn to go to very large scale. But if we do those two things, I'd say it's looking very good for us.
So algae is really the growth plan of the future.
Yeah, you know what I tell people is I think that it's going to be the new agriculture. Mm-hmm. We have a very good history in this country of agriculture, of the developments we've put into it, of the efficiencies we've brought to it. And, we produce enough food here to feed ourselves, and we export a huge amount to the rest of the world. You know, thank God we do, because that keeps large parts of the third world alive, you know, when they're having famines and the likes. And I think algae has an opportunity to come right along with that. It can be the new corn and the new soybean.
Wow. So pond scum can actually save the world then?
Yeah. I don't know. On its own, I don't know if it's going to save the world. Yeah. But I think it can change the world in a positive way. I think it's an opportunity that we have ignored. We've been eating algae for thousands of years, right? We've known it's been out there and we've ignored it. Part of the reasons we ignored it is because there wasn't a requirement before for it. Petroleum was abundant. Our food was abundant. But, you know, there's more than 6 billion of us on this planet now. We're frankly running out of resources. And so every opportunity we have that brings new resources to the table, we have to take advantage of those. And right now, this is the best new resource we have out there. We have to spend some time. We have to do some research. We have to do some development, some engineering development, some biological, some regulatory development, right? These are changing times, and we're going to have to digest those, and it's going to be a little bit painful sometimes. It's going to take a little longer than we hoped, but it's a brand new resource. It's a new energy resource. It's a new food resource. It's a new economic resource, and I think all of those things are really driving it to be the new technology and to make, as you said earlier, to make San Diego the green Houston.
Wow. Well, that's an optimistic future, and I thank you for being here, and thanks for and good luck with your research here at UCSD.
Thanks, Kim. We all need it.